Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
All right, welcome back, Terps fans. Do we still have Terps fans out there? Are you guys still hanging around? Hey, congratulations. You're listening to Shell and Tell episode after that kind of loss. It means you are a ride or die Terp fan like the two of us.
Yeah, that was a game that kind of sucked the soul out of us, but it was a little good game. But so we'll dive into that. Talk about a little bit about the biggest star from the Iowa game shining above the field.
Yeah, I think that might have been the only star. Yeah. We'll discuss the heartbreak of that Iowa game and then also talk about the tragic injury, this time on the offensive side of the ball. We were holding out hope. That was the one side we hadn't really been bit too hard on, but it couldn't have taken a bigger first bite.
Yeah, it was a big injury, the biggest name to date. So we'll dive right in.
Yeah, I mean, let's get back to before our hearts were broke. Let's get back to that Friday evening where we all still had hope. We all were still planning on having a good time. You know, we had that little bit of a win. Thank you, SVP, for moving the tailgate times from 4 to 3. Unfortunately, I live too far away from the stadium for that to have mattered for me. Apparently, I would have had to get there at noon or late because we left. And an hour and 15 minutes later, I tweeted out, "Thanks, University of Maryland. It's an hour and 15 minutes since I left my house, and I'm 20 minutes from my house."
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I took, I usually come across traffic, you know, taking 495, of course, 95 South here and there, but I usually, I'm coming from MoCo, so I take New Hampshire, and it took me an hour and a half, and I never have that bad traffic, let alone on New Hampshire. So it felt a little bit, I guess just bad knowing that, you know, we're all going through those the kind of transportation issues. But at the same time, I was driving my dad, so I kept telling him, I was like, "Hey, it's kind of nice knowing that we're sitting in this much traffic, knowing, you know, it could probably be a packed house at Maryland Stadium."
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely good to see. I mean, we got down there a lot 4B. We finally got there. It was only an hour late. It was the original open time. We got there at 4 o'clock. It was okay. It was a decent time. We last couple of weeks we did not have a very good tailgate turnout there. This week it was a very good tailgate turnout. It wasn't quite West Virginia level. I think just because of the Friday traffic issues, but heavy people in the lot. Lots of drinking, lots of fun, lots of cornhole. It was a good time down there in 4B. Shout out to the Shot 30 people down there. If you don't know, now you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys got to get over there. But obviously, I was just kind of walking on campus. It was very refreshing to just see the sheer number of people. I was really surprised about just the number of Iowa fans walking onto campus from Route 1. Overall, it was definitely kind of an electric pregame atmosphere.
Yeah, it was a pretty good showing from the Iowa fans. You know, when I saw where the tickets weren't sold before the game, where you're seeing all those green dots we were all so focused on because we wanted that sellout for the Terps, I figured it was going to be a very light Iowa showing. It certainly wasn't the largest showing of the year. West Virginia still holds that by a long shot, but, you know, they're right down the road. I've seen plenty of other teams bring in a ridiculous number of fans that circle my seats. But there was definitely some yellow splattered inside that blackout. But the Maryland fans showed up too. That stadium, not only with its nice, shiny, bright light up there, but it looked good pretty much all the way around.
Yeah, honestly, to me, I mean, like you said, I think it was just the one side where, you know, like the visiting, where it has the visiting section. I mean, like you said, you know, you saw a lot of those yellow, but really, to me, it did not look like there were a ton of empty seats. You could tell there were a little bit, but not like in years past where, you know, it's Maryland, Michigan, and Michigan's taking up 50% of the stadium, and then it's just, you know, seats all over. Like, no, it felt like a lot of Maryland fans, and the student section was completely sold out again. So, I think that's going to be a big takeaway from this year, just the student turnout so far for these games.
Yeah, I really hope we didn't ruin that student turnout. I hope we get those guys back out there. We're going to have to see. But this pandemic has certainly fixed the students. They showed out. They were a little bit more late arriving on this one. I think Friday night had them going a little harder. But yeah, Once they were there, it was packed out as any other time. I think what's nice about the Maryland Stadium is it's one of the crappy things about the stadium, but it also works out in this, is with the not having seats, the bleacher side of things, when you're not a full sellout, everybody just kind of stretches. You get a little room. So you're not seeing a bunch of empty seats. It's like, I'm taking up 2.5 seats, and so is Fred. And so it ends up just kind of filling in a little bit. Of course, you can jam people in there. But there were plenty of people in there. It was plenty loud. For the first quarter came out with excitement. We should stick in the first quarter for a while, because I don't know if it got any better after that.
Yeah, it was. I wish I could say like a tale of two games, but it was just the second quarter versus everything else. I mean, once Iowa scored on that, what was it, the first play of the second quarter, I believe. Yeah, it just did not stop. That was bad.
It was
very
bad.
Very, very bad.
Yeah, so like you said, we ended up winning the first quarter 7-3, but just by barely. They just stopped driving the ball into the horseshoe end at the students and waited for the clock to run out to go to the other side of the field. Ended up scoring there. And the next play after the score is the story of this game, and hopefully not the season, but it felt like it in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, even there's the 5 minutes to open up the second quarter, Iowa scored, and it was 21-0, and just in that stretch. And I mean, just the, what do you think of it? I mean, Iowa scoring the touchdown, and then the kickoff, and then Demas going down, and then not only did Demas go down, but he fumbled at the 10, so Iowa gets to take over. I mean, it was just the absolute worst turn of events that Maryland could have had. And I thought just the culmination of just the the pace that Iowa was able to put up points versus, in addition to just the Demas injury, Maryland just could not get its footing.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't know why, and I wish I hadn't thought it, but I saw that injury before it happened, man. Like, when he was running sideline to sideline up there, I'm like, what are you doing? Because he's so tall and lanky, and that's what I've always hated about him being back there. I'm like, you have to straight line speed this or nothing at all. Yeah. And when I saw him grab, I mean, of course, then you just watch it, and that knee, I'm 40 yards away, and I watched exactly what that knee did. It was clear. It was over. I grabbed Fred. I don't think he had seen it live. He has since watched, but I was like, bro, that's it. That's the season. I just put my hands in my head. I was like, it's over.
Yeah. It was tough. I mean, from my vantage point, I saw the fumble, and then I didn't really notice that anyone was down until about 5-10 seconds later. And then I saw a tweet that came up on my timeline, and you could see Demas saying, I'll be back. So I tweeted it. I was like, you could see Demas saying, because the TV was also right above me, so then I saw that. So I tweeted. I was like, Demas is saying you're coming back. Maybe. And then someone tweeted it. He was like, yeah, I saw the injury. And then
bro,
about
I was
5-10 minutes later, once I saw it, I hate watching those types of injuries.
I was so certain that the fumble had no effect on me, like none.
Yeah,
I had cared zero that ball was on the ground. Yeah. I didn't at all. And it was instant. Like, of course, once you figure out like it's a hard injury, like you did, but like in the moment, I was like, Demas, like there was nothing about the ball, and I was just kind of taken aback by it. And you know, at that point, they're now up 10-7 with the ball on like the 10-yard line, and you know, immediately score. And even at that point, there's like that little bit of hope. Like, if the normal year, you would have seen that stadium empty immediately.
Yeah,
and yeah. Really didn't. Like, there was it silenced. Like, we no longer were having fun in the stadium.
Yeah.
But I saw almost no exodus of the fans in that moment, because we all just thought, we still have firepower. This is still a different team. We can at least make a game of this.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you just, every time Iowa scored, I just kind of looked at the clock, and I was like, okay, 7 minutes left or 10 minutes left in the second quarter. Like, there's plenty of time. All you need is just one long drive. Take away a little bit of Iowa's momentum. You have the home crowd behind you. Establish your run game a little bit more and get some points on a possession, and then go from there.
Establish the run game a little bit more. Let's, you know, before we dive on to how bad Talia is and make it all his fault, because it's what everyone feels like, it's what everyone wants to do with these six interceptions. Where in the hell was the run game? This started before we even were even behind. Like, the very first drive of Maryland Terrapins, they got down to a 3rd-and-1 situation. The play was right in front of my seats. It's like, literally, I was standing eye level with it. And I guess it was an RPO play. Well, he should have ran. He should have taken that ball for that 1 yard himself because he was wide open on the left side. He pulls the ball and throws a 20-yard deep shot to Demas that ends up being 25 yards because he goes it way over his head. I don't know how he missed a wide open 6'5" wide receiver, so that's on him. But Lox, why are you even doing that? It's the first drive. You know this kid has had a problem with nerves. He had a terrible problem with nerves in the Northwestern game. He had a terrible problem with nerves in the Illinois game. You have him at 3rd and 1 on the very first drive. Run the ball. Let Fleet Davis pick this up. Let him get confidence. I was so upset by that play, and then it just snowballed.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, and I think Loxley didn't take the responsibility after the game. I mean, he took responsibility and everyone took responsibility, knowing that, you know, they mentioned, you know, we didn't play to the standard, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that there was a true acknowledgement that, hey, there were some things that we could have done to slow the game down a little bit more. And I mean, that was the first thing. Hell, I even at halftime, I got 2 texts and was like, where's TFD? Where's Isaiah Jacobs, Penny Boone? Like, we didn't do any of that.
Nothing.
And honestly, in those kind of situations, and you mentioned the Northwestern game, and I felt like you're right. Like that the Iowa game and the Northwestern game are a perfect example of what the floor for Talia is. And obviously the Minnesota game and the first 4 games of this year show, you know, what the ceiling is. But just the, like you said, just the insistence to get everything through the air, to force everything. And, you know, Talia, he mentioned on Tuesday, he was like, I need to remember that I can't get a 40-point touchdown in one.
No,
point.
He forgot again.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have assistants that are making 6-7 figures, and that's what doesn't sit well with me. It's that we have seen, as fans, we have seen this under this staff before. Similar situations, uncomfortable, or you're just not prepared, and you know that. I mean, it's not like you have a walk-on running back, freshman running back there. You have Tayon Fleet Davis. This is not his first rodeo in Big Ten play. So that's what really didn't sit well with me. So I wonder. I mean, you know what? This weekend, Ohio State, it's going to be another game like that. You know, we'll see. It's a chance for them to learn from their mistakes, but that it just shows the lack of progress on that front.
To me, focusing on that 3rd and 1 on the first drive, what that reminded me of, I know we talk Ravens a lot on here. I know a lot of you guys out here are Washington football team fans, so I'm sorry, but I feel like you still follow it a little bit. This reminds me so much of John Harbaugh being outcoached by Andy Reid, where you go into the Chiefs, and because they're the Chiefs, you decide you need to play a different line of football. You need to surprise. Like, I felt like in that moment on a 3rd and 1 against 90% of teams, he would have ran that ball. But because he's against a top 5 squad and he's in this moment, he's like, oh, we'll catch him sleeping here thinking we're going to run the ball and throw. Stop trying to outsmart people and just play football. It's 3rd and 1. Get the ball moving. I couldn't stand it. Like, even if we would have won that game, I promise you I would be here whining about that play. Because believe me, that play means almost nothing as bad as we ended up playing in the second quarter. But it's still the one that's got, like, stuck in my gut that I just hated so, so much.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think a lot of people are talking about, you know, Talia's mistakes and whatnot. And I agree, you know, that, again, like I mentioned 5 minutes ago, that this game showed that this is the floor for Talia, like what him at his worst. But also,
I think it's the floor for me too. I'm pretty sure I could go out there and throw 7 interceptions for you.
I think I could throw a couple on my own too.
I can't complete a pass, but I could throw some interceptions for you if you need to.
Yeah, I definitely don't have that IQ. But on those first 3 drives, we had a false start. I mean, we had that 3rd and 1, and then we had a false start, then it turned to 3rd and 6, and then that ended up being Talia's first interception. And I think another thing that we don't really remember, I mean, in the last 2 games, and I know I put it in my post-game report, but Maryland has accounted for 19 penalties for 210 yards in the last 2 games alone, okay? Rutgers, at this point in the season, has under 15 penalties, period. So there's more than just, you know, Talia. I mean, Talia has taken a lot of heat these last couple of days, and I get it. He's the quarterback. It all starts with him. But there were a lot of people that did not play to what Loxley and the players say, the standard. So that's not been lost on me either.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's like you said, we've seen this before. It's not, it hasn't been a talent thing with a lot of them. It's a head issue, and it's been across the board. You saw with Josh Jackson where, like, all he was playing out of his mind, being talked about on national media, and then the head just fell apart. Like, he didn't know where he was. He was forcing things into double coverage. You could see it live. Like, you predicted multiple. The interception after they went down, 17-7, the one where they got the fumble afterwards,
yeah.
he visually pumped, smacked the ball, and threw again. And again, before, whenever he does that, I promise you, look back at 1,000 films. I haven't done it yet, but I promise you, anytime you see him do that, it's either an interception or an almost interception. It is not a completed pass, ever. And the second I saw him tap that ball and let it go, I knew it was going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But if we can talk about that play, that was absolutely a fucking fumble recovered by Maryland. Are you kidding me, refs? There was an 80-foot beautiful screen in HD that showed very clearly two Terrapins recovered that ball. Two of them. No Iowa players anywhere near it. What in the world are you talking about?
Yeah, I from my vantage point, like, I saw it up there. I saw two Maryland players jump on it, and I was like, okay, that's Maryland ball. And they called Iowa, and I was like, all right, maybe something happened under the pile. Something must have happened. And then I went home, and then I watched it, and I was like, wait a minute, we did recover the football.
We that absolutely is Maryland recovered ball. They showed it right there on this beautiful jumbotron, which, can we talk more about that, man?
Yeah, that is...
that's the only thing worth it. After the second quarter, that's all I could do, is I basically just turned to my right, and I just watched the game on the screen. It just helped me stay up just a little bit from the terribleness I was watching.
Yeah, I don't know why. I caught myself in the second half. I was watching the screen instead of looking at the field right
because
below
they're bigger than you. Like, it's a much closer game to look at the screen than it is to look at the field below you.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And then Fred caught me once. I was watching the little new screen on the Gassette he like slapped me on the shoulder. He's like, bro, you're watching the wrong screen. I'm like, oh, you're right, what an idiot. Like, but my old Maryland head's so used to watching the iPad on a stick down there that it didn't even affect me at all.
Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. Someone had mentioned that on the site that it had crashed earlier in the day, and I was really hoping that Maryland did not go through that during the game, because if a second quarter like that happened and then the scoreboard went out, yeah, that would have been a very interesting topic of discussion amongst Maryland fans, the least.
It would have been the most Maryland thing ever,
yeah,
man.
Honestly, it really would have been. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like, you know, I'll just speak for myself, because there's probably others that were like, I wanted to have it week one, but worth the wait.
Yeah, it's worth the wait. I mean, again, I was disappointed in the program in general that you had literally 2 years to get it done. You decided to shelve it, to not let it sit in an empty stadium, which was a logical decision, but then didn't get it done with a year and a half to complete it. But I get there's a lot of weird things going on in the world. You know, yeah. I was angry about it first, but again, well worth the wait. They still got a little bit of kinks to work out on the sound, I think, but the visuals, I don't think you can get much better. I mean, they say 10th biggest in the country. I don't really care about biggest. That's the best screen in the country. I put my money on it. It is so clear. It's so in depth, and just the detail and the great imagery that they were able to put out. A-plus job by the people that weren't playing on grass today for the Maryland Terrapins.
Yeah, honestly, and I don't know why it kind of hit me, but I was walking I was coming to practice on Tuesday, and I was walking. Actually, we parked in the stadium, so I was walking onto the field, and I just looked at the big scoreboard, and I was like in the end zone, and I looked to my left, and I see the Mark Butler Tunnel, and I was just thinking, I was like, damn, 4 or 5 years ago, like, this looked completely different. And it's just pretty cool to see just the amount of money and the resources that's being invested into the football program. And I know, you know, the results at the end of the day, you know, that stuff's gonna have to turn around, and, you know, in due time, you know, Maryland will find some level of success in the Big Ten, but just to have that kind of support for the student athletes, I thought it's just really cool. So you know, hat tip to Maryland on that.
Well, you talk about 4 or 5 years ago. We might as well just stay in the past, because, like, this brought back nothing but terrible memories for me, man. Like, can you come up with any blackout that we didn't absolutely shit the bed and be embarrassed in? Like, all the way back to, I remember the Florida State game. I was, like, 22 years old over a decade ago. It was a blackout game. They came into town, and the only thing that blacked out was me, and I so much that I couldn't understand why the points were going on the wrong side of the scoreboard. Like, we were getting absolutely shit-canned. I'd have to look it up to tell you what it was, because I can't even remember the game.
Yeah.
Luckily, I think it was like 60-10 or something. You got blown out by Penn State a couple years ago. What is this blackout? We just need to stop. Bury it. You know that graveyard that Ralph Friedgen put out there? Put the fucking blackout in it.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I think the only night, I mean, I wouldn't say the only night game. There was one night game when I was a kid, the Boston College win, I think it was 07. And then the, what was it, my sophomore year, the first game, Randy Edsall's first game, wasn't a blackout, but it was that night game against Miami. Those are the only two night games I ever remember going
cool.
well.
I'm cool. We can do yeah. night games. Just don't do a blackout don't, anymore. Just don't I'm do all black- done. I'm yeah. all done with the blackouts.
Yeah,
I can tell you personally, I'm never wearing black to the stadium again.
That's fine. Just wear red. Just wear red. That's all good. As long as it's not Ohio State, just wear red.
No, we're good. We got white jerseys. We got black. We'll be all right.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, I think, you know, I think we all kind of know it, but even in the press box, we were all talking about it. I mean, we were saying this is probably as bad, if not slightly worse, than the Penn State loss 2 years ago. So, yeah, you're right. It's
worse only because of we had already lost to Temple and had our hearts ripped out before that Penn State loss. So we were hoping for a bounce back. But like in the back of our heads, we're like, if we got beat by Temple, like, there's very low chances here.
And
with the Iowa, I legitimately felt like all the way up till the Demas fumble, and again, even really until that next interception, that we could do it. But it was not to be done.
Yeah, yeah, honestly. And I think, to me, and I know I mentioned, you know, in post-game, I mentioned, you know, this is you know, the first time that maybe I've had questions about, you know, the how successful this coaching staff can be. And, you know, some people are like, you know, I hear you. I think that's pretty bold. And some people are like, how could you be so high on them for so long and then they lose one game? And it's not just the fact that they lost. It's how they lost. It's the inability to fight, the inability to, you know, Loxley and them have talked about it, to play to, quote unquote, their standard, to not scoreboard watch. And it was so obvious. The entire second quarter that is exactly what happened. And to me, the Penn State game, that was year one under Loxley. So they lose by 60. It stinks. Penn State is going to tell everyone and their mother how badly they beat Maryland. But at the end of the day, Maryland has their long-term plan. The fact that this is year three and this happens against Iowa, that's what's the most deflating. People have asked me, you know, what's going on with local recruiting and things like that. Why can't we turn the needle? And I don't see local recruiting being a problem. But what I will say is these types of games of 51-14, when we play Ohio State this weekend and then in Penn State in 3-4 weeks, these type of results are going to be exactly what hurt local recruiting. Like, if they show that they can narrow this gap against these teams and actually be, you know, show some fight, I mean, because this is to a T what local coaches say. They say, you know, we like the staff. We know with the staff. We know there's so many local guys, but you get boat race. I mean, nobody, why you go to DeMatha, you go to St. John's, you go to all these schools and you're winning. Why do you want to commit to a school over all these national offers and play for a team that's losing 51-14? I mean, you know, take it for what you want, but that's what these kids are saying. So that's the most deflating part to me.
Yeah, it's rough out there, man. And you know, one of the things we talked about earlier this year was that we had a pretty legitimate backup. I am proud that we are not that school out there that was calling for Talia's head, and I haven't seen anyone calling for Talia's head, so I'm not doing that here. But what I am doing is we talked about whether the leash would be a little bit shorter on Talia, and apparently that leash is about as long as it can get. It got to a point where I was like, Fred, why is he still out there? Like, it wasn't like a put somebody else in there to win, but like at this point, clearly nothing's good's gonna happen. Only more bad. Like, you can only get another injury. We just watched Demas get lost. I said that was the biggest bite they could take. Maybe it's not. Maybe there was one more bigger, so maybe we should keep him safe. So I don't know what he was at. And then it came very clear to me about 10 minutes later. I said, you know what he's doing? He's just waiting for him to score again so that he can take him out on a high note and think that maybe this will help his confidence. But, you know, those four extra interceptions in the middle aren't going to be, like, wiped out of this kid's mind because he ended on a touchdown. Because it's exactly what they did. They finally got him a second touchdown and they pulled him. So, but at some point you had to know that just what he was watching, what he was doing was not going to be out-benefited by that one score.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we all kind of know, like, how that family operates. I mean, you're not like, I've never ever interacted with Talia, or I mean, we saw Tua a couple weeks ago, just in the postgame presser. He was walking with Talia, so that was kind of cool. But I mean, you've just never seen them that show like an ounce of complacency or satisfaction. Even in the games, the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, it's, you know, Talia is always, you know, where can I improve? I mean, on Tuesday, I believe it was Emily Giambalvo asked him, you know, how do you respond to a loss like this? And he was like, I went and watched film. You hate to watch film after a game like that, but you watch film. So to me, I don't know why, like you said, I don't know why it takes that long. And I don't know if getting that first or second touchdown pass, if you, after that, those many mistakes, miscues, I don't know if it really makes a difference. But to me, with the whole Udinski playing and whatnot, everything that I'm mindful of now is that the four games to play to preserve a red shirt, that is what sounds like is driving a lot of decision making.
Well, there were two more quarterbacks behind him. It just needed to not be him. I wasn't trying to put somebody in there that could win. I was just trying to put somebody in there that wasn't him.
Yeah, and I agree.
that was more the thing for me. And I, yeah. You know, for me, we in the stands, we were looking at each other like, how do we even do a player of the week? How do we even do an offensive player game? We actually have them done. I'll probably put them out after we're done recording this. But we literally just disappeared from Twitter. I just couldn't dig myself out of the emotional hole of this game. But there really were some good plays in here. Like, honestly, the brunt of the blame for me goes on Lox and Talia. Like, outside of that, there weren't a lot of players that played bad. Like, there were players that didn't show up, like, that I want more from. Like, Rack could have done, I don't know, anything after Demas went down. But there was no, like, really bad things. Tareeb still played out of his mind. Like, he was all over the field. He had the defensive player of the week for us. We'll be putting that out here shortly. That touchdown to Chig was a thing of beauty before everything fell apart. Chig was determined to get into the end zone. And I just had that feeling for him, man, when he got in there. Like, I know he's already scored a couple touchdowns this year, but, like, that moment in that packed blackout stadium, everything, like, that had to be the culmination of, like, coming back, like, from that, all the heart issues he had and everything, to, like, really feel like he's made it, really feel like he made the right decision to get back into it. And so it was just this moment of joy, like, that was so quickly sucked out of us minutes later.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just like you said, just the some of these guys. I mean, Tarheeb actually almost came down. I believe it was with two interceptions. He came really close to that one.
He doesn't even want them. We and Fred have talked about this. Like, it was mind blowing to me to see the stat. He has never had an interception. But, like, when you see him get full on two hands, 10 fingers on a ball, and it's just whapped to the ground, like swatted away. Like, this man is a pass breakup specialist. He's not there to intercept the ball because he don't want it to go through his hands once and have somebody catch it to the house with him. He's getting it to the turf.
Yeah, he just wants all the game reps he can take.
Yeah, he looks great, man. And then, unfortunately, our offensive player of the game was Dante Demas. I mean, he played one quarter and led the team in receptions, led the team in yardage, was the only player going. Demas, four receptions, 61 yards in a first quarter. So tell me that injury doesn't change everything. A first quarter, four receptions, 61 yards. My man was on serious pace.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Maryland replaces him. I mean, we've talked about so much about how deep and how elusive and how complimentary some of these receivers are. But Demas is that's a pretty big void. And Rakeem Jarrett mentioned earlier this week that you can't just fill him based on one person. So it's going to be really interesting. No. But yeah, like you said, I mean, he's deserving of it for not only for this game, but so far this year. I mean, I know Talia has played out of his mind for up until last Friday, but Demas, I would have said, is probably the most integral person on this offense, just because of the type of attention and the type of playmaking that he's able to provide the offense. So it's gonna be really interesting.
You just look at the effect of next April, like the NFL draft, I mean, what this does to us, because I mean, he was a first or second round pick in a lot of people's minds at that moment. And it's between, I guess, him or Cross, who would be going off the board first at that point. And we better hope Cross plays a hell of a season, because if not, Wagamia might be another 2 days without hearing a Terp called. I mean, I know we got a couple more that'll probably be entering, but you know, I don't know if the Maryland linemen are going to be given enough respect to be in that first, second round conversation. It's going to be a little deeper than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually do think Maryland has a lot of like Chigakonkwo. I'll be kind of curious to see just how this develops, just because I think he will find a role. But yeah, I think Maryland has a lot of guys that could go to the NFL next year. But like you said, Demas is.
It's the early part. We got plenty of guys that'll get our name mentioned more than we've had last couple of years. But he was our shot at getting that like big splash where you saw like, you know, Darius Hayward Bay went 8th overall. Yeah. Nobody saw it coming, but you got to see a Maryland player be listed at the 8th overall pick. Like that was that long shot of like, oh, I'm going to watch day one. Maybe somebody stretches the Demas. Maybe they want that huge, like lanky deep threat. But like now we got to hope he's even healthy to go to the combine. And I don't know if that's going to be the case. I doubt it.
We'll see. I mean, I think so too, but you know, we got guys recovering from ACLs in less than 6 months. So
yeah, that looked like all the CLs. That was rough. But my man, I mean, he says I'll be back. I think I was just really hopeful to talk. I think he's going to be going pro, whether it's now a third day of the NFL draft or not. I think my man's going to go make some money next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the emotions of just missing out on the season are playing a pretty big role into that. I mean, we'll see. I would love to be wrong, but
we'd love to be wrong. Yeah. Not wrong often, but we'd love to be wrong. I'd love to be wrong on our predictions later in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. Not gonna happen. No, I would love to, but if I'm Demas, go get that bag, young man.
Yeah. All right, now, well, clearly you got some big step ups for Rack, Deshaun Jones. Deshaun Jones is my guy. Like I need that X factor. I need to see him be at least what Rack's been this year, and I think he's got it in the bag. Personally, I think Deshaun Jones should have been our kick returner since day one of this year. I don't know if you can now put him back there because he's now your number two wide receiver probably, but they're putting the number one wide receiver back there, and they don't care what my opinion is. That's a great idea. I will say that at least Rakim Jarrett is built better to not take that injury. Like it's not, he's the lower the ground, shiftier, like more speedster, not the long stride blanking things that injury is just waiting to happen on somebody built like Dante Demas.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, when I saw Demas out there and then, or obviously after the Demas injury and then Rack went out there, I literally looked at someone and I was like, are we kidding? Like, what are we doing? It makes no sense.
Not to mention, on that big, pretty screen when they announced all the starters, they stated that Rakim Jarrett was the starting kick returner. And then the kick return lines up, a smack front on the shoulder, go, that doesn't look like Rakim Jarrett. No. That's Dante Demas.
Yeah.
And little did I know, about 20 minutes later, I was going to be really sad.
Yeah. Oh, it makes no sense. And then just, seeing, I mean, I think there's other guys like Marcus Fleming. I'd be very, very curious to see what over these next couple of weeks. I mean,
why not just get him in there, see some action, get him out in the slot. Like we need more weapons now. You've lost, you were stacked and you're still good. Like you still got players. Don't get me wrong, but you had locked and loaded this year NFL player and locked and loaded next year NFL player. You don't got that anymore. So now you need more variety. You need more people stepping up in more locations, and speed kills, and Fleming's got speed if nothing else. So find a way. You don't want to run the ball, apparently. So if you're going to use these bubble screens, why not do it with somebody that has 4.2 speed? Like, I would like you just to run the ball behind that massive left side of your line, run some power. But every time I talk to people that know about the program, that's just not Locke's offense.
No.
Well, you got some linemen there that can do it. I've seen it. Steamroll some people. 3rd and 1, throwing the ball blows my mind. They're ginormous.
third and 1, and you're lining up in shotgun. That
yep, just that. Exactly. That
blows my mind. And I know I don't make $2.75 million like Mike Locksley, but God,
he knows more about football than I've ever known, or I'll forget, or anybody I know knows about football. I get it. But it's just, it seems to limit your options. It really does. And it's the same thing with the Ravens. Like, they told us all off season that they were going to put Lamar under center. Well, that hasn't happened. Like, I get the shotgun's best for his playing style. Great. But you got to mix in the under center every once in a while. You got to keep him guessing. You have to run out of every once in a while so that you can then get them on those play action fakes, because nobody bit on that. Nobody thought you were going to run the ball. That's what's so mind blowing, is that there were like eight people in coverage on a third and one. Yeah. Why? Why is that a possibility?
They diagnosed the plays really well, and Iowa's linebackers. I mean, and what kind of didn't, I guess, stick or sit well with me is just the fact that we knew that Iowa's secondary was good. And some people, you know, I kind of agreed, you know, when I started watching a little bit more film, just the types of like how they got some of these interceptions, how they're forcing some of these turnovers. Yeah, some of them are definitely fluky, but at the end of the day, they've been hot. They've won, I believe, now 8 consecutive Big Ten games, 11 straight games. They have the momentum, they have the confidence, and when you start to see the first and second one just move a little bit, but yeah, like you said, I mean, just the lining up and shotgun, and it stuck out to me in the first quarter. I turned to someone and said the exact same thing. Like, you only have 1 yard to go. Why make it 4?
Yeah, I'm as guilty as anybody on that. Everyone that listened to the show last week knows I was not as high on this Iowa defense. God, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not sure yet. Like, we're going to have to find out them versus Penn State. I don't know if I'm wrong, because a lot of those interceptions were just so easy. Like, they were thrown directly to them, like two hands standing flat on their feet. Like, I don't know how much worse those throws could have been. So, God, I hope they're a top 5 team. That's the only thing that's really dug me out of this emotional hole. Was I actually watched the SVP segment. It wasn't anything to do with Maryland, even though it's Scott Van Pelt, but it was about just like the wins over the weekend, and to see all these top 5 teams blowing out all these top 15 teams, like the difference that there is in that caliber of that little step down, and the realization that if Iowa really is this even top 8 squad, we had no shot. Like, we're not going to beat a top 8 team right now. In my head, they weren't a top 18 is why we could win. That they were going to be a top 20 team or top 25 team, and we were going to be a top 25 team. But even if we are the 23rd, 25th best team in the nation, the 8th best team is going to beat the living crap out of us. That was shown across the board with Ole Miss, with Arkansas, like just people getting completely demolished after amazing seasons.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, a lot of people mentioned that Arkansas score, I think it was 37-0 Georgia or Arkansas, and they were like, yeah, I feel a lot better. And I completely get that. Just from my perspective, when I went back, I was like, listen, you know, Maryland can only control what Maryland does. And at the end of the day, like, us Maryland getting steamrolled 51-14 or 60-0 by Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan or like whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, like, time's going to end up running out for Maryland under this staff. I agree. I mean, it takes time to be able to, one, get the level of talent, the level of experience, and then two, the depth. I mean, even you know, in the next 2 years, you know, Maryland's starting front might rival the talent level of Ohio State's, but can they rotate and be experienced enough in their depth, obviously. That's always going to be the issue with the smaller teams versus these perennial national powers. But
we've already seen that. I mean, with our linebacker core and our DBs, like, it's, we were, you know, had some world beaters out there that were playing amazing, but you went to the second string with Jennings. We were okay. It was still fine. You go to that third string, it's falling apart.
Yeah.
We don't have, you know, Ruben can't be everywhere. It's not, there's not enough of him.
Yeah. And he didn't play every snap. He missed a little bit in the first half, but it seemed like second half, he was kind of out there consistently, and I would say through the second quarter, a good bit. But yeah, I mean, it's just going to take time. But at the end of the day, it's just the level. I don't want to say effort, because these guys, like, at the end of the day, they care. I mean, they're the ones that are putting in all the time and whatnot. But just seeing just what we saw the first 4 weeks, that is what we need to see in conference play. To me.
And again, there was a lot of fight in a lot of those guys. Talia didn't have in that game, and that team's only going to go as far as that quarterback takes them. That's just the answer. And you know, you got the coaching staff has got to do things to support them. But we talked about linebackers here real quick. I saw some news on Mr. Jennings. I don't understand it. I like it, and I don't like it. I love to see him stating, I'm back. I love to see, you know, this going on. But I hope he's back to practice. I don't think we need to play him this week against Ohio State when we kind of know the results already, and we have a bye week afterwards. Let's get this man healthy and let's win some other games.
Yeah, I haven't posted it on the site as of Thursday night, but I did hear that he did practice. I saw him at practice on Tuesday. I heard that he did practice on Wednesday. So I know Loxy said game time decision. I didn't really buy it at face value at first, but the more I'm asking around, it sounds like it's a pretty realistic possibility. I'm expecting him to still travel, of course, with the team tomorrow. But it is a possibility that he does play on Saturday. And I mentioned, you know, earlier this week that what I'd kind of heard was that he'd probably miss this weekend. Obviously the Iowa game as well. And then, like you said, he has the bye week and then he has Minnesota. And that gives him plenty of time. But
that sounds like a great plan, Lox. Please take that plan. I mean, unless you just have like some magic ball out there that says that we're gonna beat this team. Like I don't need him out there just to beat the spread.
Yeah,
which I don't know if we're gonna do that either. We'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for you know, just the playing time, maximizing reps and whatnot. But you know, to me, I think if they put him out there, he would be closer to 100% or closer to like feeling better. I don't think they would risk it against Ohio State, but Maryland really can't afford him to get injured because the Fanaji Gote might not be coming back for this season. Terrence Lewis probably is not playing this season. So if Brandon Jennings ends up missing extended time beyond Minnesota or because he re-aggravated something, that front seven becomes a little bit concerning.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get those freshman linemen up there quick, start running like a 5-3 or something. Who knows what we have to do out there. I don't know, man. What are we ready to move on to Ohio State? Are we gonna talk about them, or where you want to go next?
Yeah, I mean, we can let's talk about, I mean, what we both, one thing that we each want to see out of Maryland when they do play Ohio State this weekend.
All right. I guess I'll go first. I want to see those little ghosts, those stars, those, you know, whatever it is in Talia's head that makes him look like he did in the first quarter of Illinois and the whole game of Northwestern and the whole game of Iowa. I want to see them gone. I don't care if we lose. I don't care if we, you know, get beat by 24 and we still put up 21 points. Cool. I do not want to see that little lost boy that he turns into in moments when he is a grown ass man slinging a rock at other times. I don't get it. I don't know how both those people can exist in the same body. I was so impressed by him to overcome that moment in the Illinois game, to have that fourth quarter that he did and the emotion that he showed with Lox afterwards, that I got you, coach. Like, I thought that was the turning moment. I thought we wouldn't see it anymore. And it showed its face maybe bigger than it's ever been shown because he's developed this leash that he's allowed to have. Because the Northwestern game was just as bad, but like they got him out of there. Like that, it was so bad. As long as that's not there, it's a great step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I think, you know, that was something that I was kind of mindful just of the decision making out of Talia. Big thing for me is that I want to see the offensive line kind of take a step forward and play a little bit more disciplined because, one, Maryland has got to cut down on the penalties. I mean, you are going to shoot yourself in the foot in these 50-50 toss-up games against Indiana, maybe Michigan State, probably Rutgers is a toss-up game. And if you're committing these types of penalties, these false starts, that's kind of just what's concerning to me. And then also they're going to be going against, again, a really good defensive line out of Ohio State. Haskell Garrett, obviously, and you know, a couple others. So I think it's going to be a pretty big test for this Maryland offensive line. But the biggest thing, really, is I want to see that fight. Like, I want to see them respond to adversity. They are going into an electric environment against an Ohio State team that always wants to beat down on Maryland so that they can come to the DMV and there's little to no concern. I mean, there's already no concern. It's Ohio State, but they always want to be able to assert that dominance. And I want to see this Maryland team fight a little bit more. You know, we saw Maryland fight against Ohio State a couple of years ago, obviously with that 52-51 really close overtime loss. But I know, saw today, I believe it was the last six ranked opponents Maryland has played. They have lost by an average of 40 points. That has got to change. And I am all for having a bad game. I understand that these types of things happen, and I have been a player when you feel these things type just spiral. and you're just like, how the hell did this happen? So I get that if Maryland can prove that last Friday was an anomaly and not a trend, I will feel so much better. But history shows that it's a trend. Prove me wrong. That's, to me, I will feel a little bit better. If Maryland can show that they can not just, excuse me, but bend over when the Ohio State scores that much.
It's all right. I've dropped two F-bombs in this, so you can go with bend over. I'll keep it cleaner next week. But, you know, after this emotional toll of this week, I just kind of let a little loose.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we just got to get out the frustration and the emotion from last weekend. So I'm all for it. But, you know, to me, again, it's about proving the Iowa game is the outlier.
Hey, I got an idea for Coach Locks. Hey, run the ball. I'd like to see you run the ball. Like 25% of the time. That's all I'm asking. I'm not saying we're going to be a balanced offense. I get it. You want to throw the rock. You want to show off your cool weapons. But run the ball just like every once in a while. I don't know. Maybe on first down once during a game. And on third and one, hey, every time. Every time until your offensive line shows they can't do it. Because I know you want to show that you have confidence in your quarterback and your passing team, but there's some big bruising dudes that we're building up in that offensive line that they kind of feel a little insulted every time you throw a 15-yard pass on a third and one. Because they say, I can do this. I can move that man in front of me 2 yards. It's not that hard. Like, we know the snap count. That's what the whole game's built off of, is 3 yards. Like, that's the thing. That's why there's four downs. You should be able to get 3 yards every time. You do better than that, you get a first down. You do worse than that, you punt the ball. That's the idea. If it's third and one, run the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly. And especially this week. I mean, Ohio State has just the firepower. And I think the secondary, I think they've taken a step forward. I thought Nick Cross took a really that one play where he was just completely flat-footed and allowed, I believe it was Tyler Goodson, to kind of run past him for, I believe it ended up being a touchdown. But I just remember Nick Cross just came across and just really bad technique. But the secondary, I mean, they're going to go against, you know, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, CJ Stroud. He has the ability to, you know, he has a good arm. He's a pretty athletic quarterback, so he can make plays out of the pocket. But, yeah, I mean, just to be able to see that Maryland just run the ball a little bit more, slow the game down. If Ohio State does get a quick score, just to take the crowd out of it a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, just show that you can be balanced.
Yeah, they're great, but they're young. Like you said, CJ Stroud is a freshman quarterback. You also have their starting running back, who's great, is Trayvon Henderson, 5'10", 210, freshman running back. He's got 510 yards already with a 9.4 average. So they're going to run the ball, lock. So just like look at what they do and try that. It's going to be an interesting game. Hopefully we catch them a little flat footed. Hopefully we can show out a little bit. Like, just keep this interesting. Beat the point spread for me. Like, that's I'll be watching this game, hoping to see good things out of our offense. I expect some, you know, pretty good things out of the defense. But I understand that they're playing against a bunch of NFL players, so things are going to happen. But I just beat the point spread. Don't be embarrassed. Like, I can't do that 2 weeks in a row. I know our schedule sucks. It's not your fault you're doing this 2 weeks in a row that you're playing two top 10 teams, but just try to make it like not a 30 point loss.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, again, it's just the, it just kind of goes back to, sorry for, you know, repeating, but it's just the making the Iowa game that outlier. I felt like we noted it in the West Virginia game, and I think that's what made me so confident, is that when Maryland scored and West Virginia got that big kickoff, and it kind of felt like, hell, is if West Virginia gets a touchdown here, like, is that it? Are we going to fold? And that didn't happen. And for four quarters, even though that second and third quarter didn't look great, they found a way. They did not give up. They did not scoreboard watch. And, like, I honest to God left that game feeling just as optimistic as I did pessimistic walking out on Friday. So this is a great opportunity.
We're 4-1. We're 4-1, people. Like, yeah, it feels like garbage. It's like the worst 4-1 feeling I've ever had. But we're only looking for two more wins. You already mentioned three of mine that I'm looking at. You mentioned Michigan State, Rutgers, who was Minnesota. The other one? Minnesota was your third. All right, so then maybe not. Indiana was your third. That's what Minnesota was the one I wanted to ask you about. So that's the next one. Like, that's after our bye week. How are you feeling about that? Because I was very doubtful when they had Ibrahim, but with Ibrahim down, That's been circled on my list as one of our W's for a while. We're going to obviously revisit this after the Ohio State game. Again, we got 2 weeks to talk about it, but it'll be kind of fun to see what our opinions are now versus what happens to us on Saturday.
I feel a lot better. I mean, I think Maryland, like, even if Maryland was playing Rutgers this week or Michigan State, I mean, I think Michigan State's a really, really talented team. I kind of had a feeling. I didn't think they were going to be this good. I had a feeling about Indiana last year, and they proved me right. And this Michigan State team is really good. And that Kenneth Walker, that running back, is a bruising of a back.
Which did not go well against first Illinois. As soon as they brought that Mack truck in, we were having some trouble.
Yeah, so that wasn't great. But honestly, I don't feel like I'm not at the point where I'm like, oh, this is going to be a year one. We're going to finish 2-10 on a 9-game or 8-game losing streak. I just don't feel that way. I think Maryland has enough talent, and I do think that the culture has improved enough. But I think if they lose to Ohio State this weekend and it becomes another Iowa game, which I hope it doesn't. I really hope it doesn't. You maybe get a reset out of that bye and then just come back fired up. But
so we still bowling, Ahmed. You still got us bowling.
I think so. Like, I don't think it's an absolute guarantee, because this Rutgers team is not the same Rutgers team.
No, it's not.
They're one of the most disciplined team in the country. They are the most disciplined team in the Big Ten. They have committed the fewest turnovers out of any Big Ten team. So they are doing well. They are making strides. Michigan State is not very not an easy opponent. I believe they're ranked number 11 right now. And Minnesota, it's a road game, and Maryland has not always had the best of success in road games. Now, granted, they've already gone into Minnesota in years past and pull out the win. Shout out Jake Funk with the game-winning touchdown run.
Not while Shell and Tell was there. We got our butts kicked, but it was a lot of fun. Thank you, Minnesota. It was an amazing
trip.
Shout out Max
Bortenschlager.
Yeah, Max.
Yeah, Mad Max. But, I mean, again, I do think that they can go bowling. And Loxley, I mean, he mentioned it after the game, and he mentioned it on Tuesday. He mentioned it today. It's all about making this an outlier. It's about making this one game, not the season, not a trend. So if they do that, and if they can bounce back, I do think that they have enough talent to beat Minnesota. And I'll go Indiana with the second win. So, yeah, Maryland's still bowling in my mind.
All right, good. I'm still going to go with bowling as well. It's a lot scarier after that beatdown than it was. I even had Iowa marked as a loss, really, in the win total, but I didn't think that was the loss. So it makes all my other W's a little bit more questionable.
Exactly.
So I guess we got to put some predictions down. They're not going to be pretty, people. So if you don't want to know, just like close your ears. But Ahmed, you go first.
I got 51-14 Ohio State. Sorry, guys. I would love to be wrong. I just feel like between Olave and Garrett Wilson, and then, you know, on the opposite side of the ball, I think this Ohio State defensive line is going to find some success. I think they're going to be able to kind of confuse the offensive line front. I think it's going to be a really good test for Eric Harris. Obviously, he's looked really good. I was actually talking with someone at practice on Tuesday. I thought DJ Glaze has looked really good so far this year. So I do think the offensive line has been a pretty pleasant surprise in my mind. And I know I had some concerns about Harris, but I just think for 60 minutes, I think it's going to be hard. At Ohio State, I'm just not super confident, so I'm rolling a 37-point Buckeye win.
Yeah, I'm not quite as big as you. Shocker, the homer goes a little bit tighter, but obviously I'm picking the Buckeyes this week. I'm not that crazy. I got it 47-20, so it's not quite embarrassing. It's not good, though. I'd be okay with it. I hope that I'm okay with both numbers being higher. But I'm not really okay with 14 points that you put out there. That feels real gross to me. I just don't think that the extra one day is enough to retool your offense and figure out what's going on when you lost your biggest piece. I think it's going to take longer than that. I think that bye week's going to be immensely necessary, and they're going to have to really hit the drawing board again and go, hey, guys, we're not the same team. We can't go next man up for this. It's one of the, you know, one of the three pieces that you couldn't have. And, you know, who knows? Like, maybe we're overplaying Rack on that. Maybe it was really one of two pieces.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be really interesting to see. I mean, how one, Maryland has to go against an opponent and figure out in a game how how they are going about replacing Demas. And I mean, Rack and Deshaun Jones, they both could get a lot of double teams and whatnot. This Ohio State secondary is good enough to go man, or if they want to go a double, then they can do that. And I think just kind of working through that, I'm a little bit concerned just in terms of having to adjust to that against an opponent like the Buckeyes. And I know I'm coming across as very negative this episode, but I just feel like this Ohio State team is going to confuse some things. And like you said, bye week comes at a perfect time. Six games in, you get a chance to review that film. You have 2 weeks, get healthy, and then part two, there we go.
Yeah, hey, we're still Terp fans here. That's one of my biggest complaints about listening to some of these podcasts out here from Maryland Terp fans. You wonder if they even like the teams anymore. I promise you I do. Like, we got to be a little bit realistic here that this week didn't feel good. We kind of hate that we're Terp fans, but we're still here. Like, I'm still going to be at every game this year. You know, maybe I won't show up the tailgate for the noon game, but I'll be there at kickoff.
I mean, so, it is what it is. Exactly. I mean, the first 4 weeks, we wanted to bask in all the glory, and I feel like you know, if you're just a true fan, you got to be able to look at it objectively and understand where the good is and where the bad is and take it in stride. But, hey, we both have us bowling. And at the end of the day, that in preseason, we mentioned that was one of the things that Maryland needed to do in order to take this program a step forward. So, it's not always going to be pretty. It's not always going to be smelling like roses, but, you know, we'll come out on the other side. Okay.
Yep. So before we do the Maryland thing, and I let you give a couple minutes on the basketball teams, we don't spend a lot of time yet. We're still not their season. We got the mailbag again this week. I see we got in here. So do you want to go with the first question here?
Yeah. So Tony, he dropped a question and asked if I'm expecting a bounce back or hangover for this weekend. And kind of like I mentioned, I mean, I think just the ability to figure out how to replace Demas in a game and adjusting against an Ohio State secondary that does a lot. They're going to go against an Ohio State defensive line that I kind of have some concerns about against this Maryland offensive line. But I am slightly kind of expecting a hangover effect just because this Ohio State team has the ability to swarm, and when they swarm, they can pour it on fast. So I am a little bit concerned about just the mental aspect of the team. But again, they'll have a chance to wrap this up, go into a bye. So we'll see if it affects the whole season, but I think the bye is coming at a perfect time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his definition of a bounce back or hangover. We're not bouncing back and winning this game, I can tell you that. I mean, if we do, it's a miracle, and I will eat every word gladly. That'd be an amazing feat. And, you know, I never thought we would win the game where we took them to double overtime and Piggy missed the wide-open two-point conversion for the win. Yeah. So, been wrong before versus this team. Hope I'm wrong again. I definitely had marked that as an L before I walked into the stadium, but it's just not going to happen this week. That's how I feel about it. I would consider anything more than the 20 points I predicted for the Terps a bounce back in this, just to get your, you know, get ready for that next week. Next question I see here is Mr. Joe Smith, 32. What in the F is going on with local recruiting? We're getting shellacked. What's your opinion on the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator hires, and Locke's assistant hires in general outside of recruiting prowess? First, I'm going to take this real quick on the overall world side of things and let the expert tell you what's actually happening. We just lived through a pandemic where these kids weren't allowed to play football, a lot of them. If they were allowed to play football, they weren't allowed to go on official visits. They weren't allowed to see colleges. They're just starting to get back on campus. They're just starting to get wooed and all this, you know, all the craziness that goes on for these high school kids that treated like gods and kings and just like from every school across the country. Like, there's going to be a delay overall. And frankly, even the schools that have all these commitments going on right now, I don't believe them. There's going to be more kids signing with teams they're not committed to than ever in the history of time right now. Oh, and by the way, with the name, image, likeness, and the transfer portal rules now, it doesn't even really matter who you're signing because they only have to be there for like 4 weeks and enter their name back into the portal. So I'm not too worried about it overall. I think there's going to be the same signing day craziness that there always is. Locks will find a way to get at least one of those done, and there'll be every school across the country will have one of those because these kids don't want to miss out on their opportunity. So they'll say, yeah, Penn State, I'm coming. But they're still all going on 4 more official visits. So what does that commitment mean if you're going on official visits elsewhere? I've never understood taking visits after you're committed. It means to me you're not committed, but I also just get the fact you want to get all this fun and all these free things.
Yeah.
So that's my take. You tell the expert stuff because I'm just talking about the world.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the local recruiting part, I mean, I know that there have been a couple of guys that have been local and, you know, like Octavian Smith. I mean, he's really come around. He was committed to Northwestern and really didn't give Maryland the time of day at first. And now look, Maryland's got the inside track on him. I posted a story on Mansoor Delaney today, and you know, he was supposed to come to the West Virginia game, and you know, he again, on if you go to Inside the Black and Gold, you can figure out which game he's going to be in attendance for, you know, for this season. You got Andre Roy, who visited and loved his visit when he came to campus 2 days after he committed to Penn State. So like, I'll point back to what I said earlier, because I remember doing a mailbag this summer and someone asked me, you know, like, what's the perception on Maryland football? And it was right before Maryland lost on KJ Winston and Mansoor. So it might have maybe came across as fake, but like, there are a lot of people that were maybe indifferent or weren't super high on Maryland that have changed their tune now. And they're like, yeah, I love Loxley, or I love Brawley Evans, or I know Coach Zahn from way back when, or hey, Coach Elijah Brooks and I, you know, we've been working together for God knows how long. So like, there are guys that like they have these personal relationships, but again, it's going to come down to on-field performance. That is what is going to move the needle. Especially if Maryland can get to a bowl game, they're going to be able to get a lot of these kids. A lot of these kids. Also, you got to remember that when June opened up, some of these kids took visits, and they just got like drained, like literally drained. Once everything picked back up, it was absolutely gunning. I think Maryland had almost 200 unofficial visits, 40 official visitors. I mean, even I know like the staff by the weekend, they were exhausted. Like there were a couple days where they just took off. So, again, I know I kind of digress a little bit, but if Maryland gets to a bowl game and they can do that and they can show the on-field improvement like they had the first 4 weeks, I think they're going to be fine. And if they don't get someone local, they have expanded their offensive tackle recruiting board to anyone and everyone. So, like, I am not worried about recruiting. I really, really believe that Maryland will be just fine. They'll be able to get some guys. Daniel Owens, he's another guy, great kid, 3-star defensive end out of Calvert Hall. I've mentioned since like beginning of summer, since Maryland started, you know, really turning it up with him, that as long as Maryland pushes, they're going to get him. So what it looks like now is going to be very different than what it looks like in a couple months. And I've mentioned to the board a couple of names that are in play for flips that are very realistic. Again, you can go to Inside the Black and Gold to figure that out. We got the scoop. So again, they're going to be fine. I don't know if it's going to be a top 25, but like they'll be top 40, top 35. And they're going to address all their needs, because right now the only need that they really need to fill is offensive tackle.
All right. And next question doesn't get too far away. So we'll be talking about a lot of saying Poppy Chulo. My question is, do you think the Iowa loss will have the same negative effect of recruiting that the Penn State loss did, or not negative of recruiting like 2019 Penn State game did, not that we're recruiting well locally to begin with? So people are still real negative on this local recruiting. We all know that's why we brought Locks in, like the godfather of the DMV. But Godfather DMV might be the godfather of Florida at this point. Like he's doing a lot of things elsewhere. I don't know, you know, why. I know everyone's so focused. We do want to bring in these top local recruits. That will really show that we're there. One game I don't think is going to do it. Like we've talked about, I don't know that Penn State game was really the reason that we didn't get recruits. The reason we didn't get recruits is because you only won 3 games. Like that's bigger than that loss.
Yeah, and again, I feel like just this answer, Poppy, love you, bro. But I feel like, again, it just goes back to making that Iowa game an outlier. If they get blown out by Penn State, by Ohio State, by Michigan, and even Michigan State, yeah, that's when it becomes concerning. Also, I guess maybe in the last couple seconds, I thought about it. I mean, we've had some really weird recruitments because like Mansoor Delaney, who was literally committed to Maryland and then flipped. Andre Roy, that was absolutely bizarre. Octavian Smith, you got another. So I KJ Winston was another who, for like a solid week and a half, I was sold that he was coming to Maryland. So just some very, very weird recruitments this cycle.
Not to mention the Nyjer Graham debacle.
Yeah, exactly. It was Nyjer Graham, good guy. I forgot about that. Holy shit, I got to DM him on Twitter.
Yeah.
But it was just been a really, really weird cycle. And I think a lot of that stuff is going to get sorted out in the end. I think where things look right now, Andre Roy's commitment, I think we're going to see a lot more twists and turns. So
it also depends on Iowa. Again, if Iowa goes ahead and is in the Big Ten championship and like is even discussed about as a playoff team, then so what?
Yeah.
Like, this happened. This was going to happen.
Same again, as Northwestern.
I don't think it's going to happen. But, yeah, exactly. The Northwestern loss was mind-blowingly bad because no one knew it was going to be the only time in a decade that Northwestern was good. Nobody had any idea.
Nope.
You know, of course, the only year we get assigned to play Northwestern out of the West is the one year in a decade they're good, because that's how Maryland's schedule works. Like, we always – how is that possible that that happens? We play them, what, once every 8 years or something crazy? And we get their year. Great. Thanks.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, you just don't always know the strength of these teams super early on. But like I said,
we'll find out when they play Penn State. That's going to be a game. I'll be watching it. Don't like either team. Going to be watching it anyway.
I think it'll be fine.
All right. Well, give the fans what they want. You know, all the ones that have suffered through this just because they want to hear about basketball. Why don't you tell people about your article you just put out and the Big Ten Media Day, stuff like that.
Yeah. So Durgin, Eric Ayala, and Dante Scott all met with, they were all on BTN today just talking about the game or the upcoming season. And one of the things Durgin talked about was just the team chemistry and the buy-in. And that was the biggest thing that he loved. And Durgin, a couple of times, I think both during his press his press conference at the podium and then when he was at the BTN desk, he mentioned, he jokingly said, I think I'm taller than Fats, but just the way that he plays, the pace that he plays with. And it's not only just impacting his ability to score offensively, it's also helping him defensively. And Turgeon noted that he's usually getting about 2-3 steals a game. And I've heard some really good things about him. I've heard he's working to be that facilitator. And even Turgeon mentioned it. He didn't want to come to Maryland to be that guy that had to score 25 points. There's going to be a strong need to, you know, get Eric Ayala the scoring opportunities. Similar to last year, Dante Scott, Turgeon called Dante's development from freshman year to now one of his best stories that he's had possibly ever since coaching. So he's going to play a very big role. And also just mentioned, you know, just the ability for Kudus to come down, play that five, traditional five. That's going to help Maryland roll into that traditional lineup. And, you know, it's very obvious when you watch his team last year, just having to try and, you know, move these pieces around to try and find some recipe for success. And I think having a guy like Kudus, the rim protector, and then a guy like Dante, who can score inside and out. Hakeem Hart, he mentioned that he's put on, he's up to 6'8 right now. And he also did mention that Fats Russell is up to about 13 pounds since arriving on campus. Definitely some very good comments about them. And we'll actually have Big Ten Media Day, or excuse me, Maryland Media Day next Tuesday instead of football press conference day. So we will have plenty of coverage. And Inside the Black and Gold is going to announce a new staff addition to help with basketball coverage this weekend. So exciting news about that.
Very cool. Very cool. I think that's a huge mouthful about Dante Scott. Yeah. It's the biggest transition in that moment. I immediately flash back to how bad Bruno Fernando was as a freshman. It was just like 5 fouls in 7 minutes. And then how great he ended up being. The development of sticks from sticks to logs, the Alex Len development from that lanky guy that could barely walk down the court to an NBA. He's in like his 10th year. So that's a big statement. I'm excited to see it. I know that he's completely morphed his body. You know, last year we didn't have any big men. So he put on a bunch of weight, put on a bunch of muscle, went down there and played the four for us. This year he's lost a ton of weight. So I'm excited to see how high this man can fly.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, Hakeem Hart is going to be that kind of that guy that locks down that three, and just for him to grow from, I believe Turton said he was just under 6'3" when he arrived. Now he's at 6'8".
That's a lucky lottery ticket, Locks.
Yeah,
I mean, that's Turch.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. So I think the fact that, I mean, we all know that Eric Ayala, I love his game. I know some, you know, they're kind of, some are high, some love, or not as high. I think
I've been overrating Eric Ayala since he got there, and he's still very, very good. So I'm right there with you.
I think he's just like fun to watch. I think he does a really good job of creating inside and out. And I just think there's so many complimentary pieces on this team. I'm really excited to see James Graham, kind of see how he develops. I think Ian Martinez is going to be a guy that probably plays a little bit of one this year for him. And then Turgeon also mentioned Julian Reese. He's a freshman out of St. Francis. He's going to play a little bit of a four, maybe a stretch five this summer, or this season, excuse me. And when I saw him, I got a chance to see him last fall, or spring, excuse me. I think he's really, like, he's talented. You could tell that he has these post moves. I think he needs to just get a little bit more aggressive when it comes to rebounding and controlling the glass, things like that. But it'll be interesting. I think maybe, if anything, the depth in the front court is maybe my biggest question. But really sounds like just the way that this team works together, they mesh with each other, they complement each other on the court. Sounds like the pace is getting back to normal Turgeon pace. And sorry, there's going to be some people that do not like Turgeon normal pace. So that might not have been the best thing to say.
Yeah, but you know, if there's Locks haters out there, there's a lot more Turge haters out there. But it just takes time to develop haters, you know.
Yeah, those haters already have kids.
Yeah, that's true.
It's crazy. I posted an article in one of the Facebook groups, and people were like, "Oh, was he patting himself on the back for his second round exit last year?" And it's like, the season hasn't started. Why are we mad? But you know, teach their own. I'm really excited. So again, we'll be on campus on Tuesday, have all that coverage. And to close it out, Maryland was finished to pick fifth in the Big Ten preseason media poll.
All right, well, thank you guys for listening once again. Unfortunately, Fred was unable to join us. After I dug myself out of the depression hole, we just kind of were running out of time before the game to get us all lined up in the same spot at the same time. I think what I'm going to do, they did do the Shell and Tell segment of Birdland BS. Last time I just stuck it after the exit music. We'll do that again. So stick around if you want bonus coverage. Fred loves that screen even more than I do, and he's a techie nerd. He'll tell you all the cool stuff about it and all the things that he loved. Drew from the show's opinion. He's been a Maryland fan for a long time, but he's more that fair weather, like, shows up when they're good. And I convinced him that they were good to come down here for that Friday night, and we ripped the rug out from under him. So it'll be a fun lesson for you guys, I think. Yeah. If you want to get a hold of us, you can always email us at shellandtellpod@gmail.com, sending your questions, sending any contacts, anybody you want us to get a hold of, any interviews you might think we should do on the page. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter. You got @shellandtellpod. You got myself at @terpsbespert. Follow Fred at @FredBLBS and Ahmed at Gafir the Turtle.
All right, Drew. This is going to be a little bit of a different take on Shell and Sell here.
Oh, hold on, this is like a love fest.
Hey!
Yeah, you guys are going to get the chance to do this. I'll just say I watched the game up through till it turned to 24-7, and I turned it off.
That's
at that point.
That's about the time that I checked out, and I was in the seat. So.
Quitters. You guys are quitters. No, it was rough as the Terps lose their first game on the season, fall to 4-1. As they lose 51-14.
Joe Carlos to Iowa. Says, can we cancel this segment?
I know. Trust me. It was painful to even write this
Penn
segment.
State blows their
Joe,
broad.
I already told them we're going to take care of business, Joe. We are.
This was PSU 2.0. Yeah, Penn State. I mean, just
so bad.
These Friday night primetime games are not our thing. Let's just stop.
It just doesn't work.
Let's just stop. Like, it has not worked out well.
Didn't I warn you last week? Didn't I?
It's been rough, man. It was rough. But before we get into the game, we got to talk about what the experience was like there. Tailgating was fun. Tailgating lot was full.
Shot
30
is great.
Shot 30 was great.
That's what Drew took away from the game. Yeah. Shot 30.
Hey,
shot
30. I was fully into the game.
Yeah, he was.
Until that second quarter. And I was
when you started feeling it
not
all.
Not even just, no, it wasn't even that.
Well, all right. So for those out there, can you guys, I've been there, I've done it, but
yeah.
Explain to those fans that don't know, that aren't big Maryland people, what is Shot 30? And we got 34 people out there for the Terps segment, which is pretty good. So
all right,
tell
so
them what it is, because it's awesome.
If you're interested in going to a Terps football game. The tailgating lot to go is 4B. In lot 4B, it's right in front of Xfinity Center, you know, in front of the basketball arena. It's a little bit of a walk to the to the football stadium.
It's definitely a walk.
It's a walk, so you're going to have to, you know, commit to that.
Did not undersell the walk.
The problem was I went the week before to the Kent State game, and I didn't drink at all.
Ah, there you go.
And that walk killed me then.
Right.
So, like, I was even set up for it, and I still was like.
But Shot 30, what it is, right? It's a group of tailgaters who have been tailgating in Lot 4B for a long time, and they bring a table or two, and I'm talking six-foot tables.
Yeah.
Full of alcohol
it's
of your choice.
It's a candy store of alcohol.
Shove food in your face every once in a while.
Yep. Every 30 minutes, they're out there ringing cowbell, and you come down there, and you do a group shot together, usually somebody that will pick somebody randomly out of the crowd to do a toast every 30 minutes for these shots. Doesn't cost you anything. You know, everybody kind of contributes and brings a bottle of liquor to add to this collection. They do a really, really good job with it. It's
huge,
a lot of
collection,
fun.
A lot of randomness.
Some people's family throws the good old Mad Dog on the table for
$4.99. They really splurge for that Mad Dog. I hadn't seen that in a long time. So tailgating was good. Get into the stadium. Obviously, all the hype around this board and everything, man, if it not only lived up to expectations, in my opinion, it exceeded expectations, which I can't believe it did that. I mean, and I'm an audio video guy, right? So I look for things to, you know, critique when it comes to audio video. The clarity in this picture was unreal.
Yeah.
The refresh rate on it, which I know is going to get nerdy on you guys, was unreal. Meaning when things move fast, it doesn't get blurry or anything like that.
You have the shadows behind it.
Right. It was super, super clean. And it's huge. The pictures do not do it justice. It is mammoth. The sound quality, I still think that there's some work to do with the speakers and everything. They had them hung up. I don't think all of them were working, and I don't think it was 100% done. They had enough.
It wasn't fully surround, is what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah. They had enough to get the sound. It was definitely better than it was with the temporary setup.
Yeah.
But still some room to improve on the sound. And the other part of this, Drew, the crowd. I mean, they showed up.
It was a blackout.
Everybody left there feeling defeated and embarrassed again, but the crowd showed up, man. It was impressive to see.
Yeah, at halftime, that student section was gone.
Yeah.
If there's any student there, they were
They
were just the people that don't get invited to parties. That was the only student that left. I still had a good time. It was still a good time to go to a night game for a Terps, and it just went south really quickly.
Yeah, you can't throw 7 interceptions, commit 10 penalties. I don't care who you're playing, the number 5 team in the nation or a Division II football team. 7 interceptions and 10 penalties, you're going to lose that football game.
If they would have played that way against Kent State, I'm not saying they would have lost against State.
They would have.
But you know what I mean? Like, we won that game handily. If they play the same exact way, like you said, against any team, it still wouldn't have been a good... A good side.
I'm just going to chime in.
Hitting buttons left and right.
Do you want me to do it?
I got it. We got people chiming in, making sure Ryan's okay since he's not here after that loss.
Ryan's fine. This is a Wednesday night. This is his work night. Normally, he's a nurse, so he works, you know, later into the night. He works 12-hour shifts. So
I'll try to play his agony out for you guys.
That's right. He's still getting over it, though. You know, as we all were. It took a day or two for us, I think, to even make a social media post. I think
then 2 weeks, 2 days later.
Radio silence out of you two, which is amazing.
Finally, I was like, all right, I took some time to digest this because listen, the game didn't start off terribly. I mean, they ended up coming out of the first quarter ahead somehow, even though they weren't playing great. They were leading 7-3. Well, that was the last time the Terps showed any kind of hope in this game, because right after that they're losing 10-7, and on a kick return, Dante Dimas goes down with one of the more gruesome knee injuries that I've ever seen. Ryan and I.
Hey, Fred, move your head just to the right, just a little bit. Yeah. There you go. That's what it looked like for you fans that don't know what it looked like.
I apologize. That was not me that put that photo in there. That was this guy here to my left, Scott. it was gruesome. To see it in full speed in person like that. Ryan and I looked at each other, said, "Oh, yep, he's done. Done for the year." We knew it.
I was up in the lines and getting another drink, and it was. You could hear the silence out, and you know what I mean, out there. You could hear the silence. I didn't really know what happened, and then by the time I got back, it was already the fall off was already occurring. And you told me about demons. I'm like, well, that's why. And
then So not only does he go down with this injury, but in the process, he fumbles the football because he just lost every LCL and PCL and ACL.
No one told him the ball.
And then obviously they're Iowa's got the ball back in very short field. They go down there, score another touchdown. I think that's all she wrote for the Terps at that point, because Talia in this game had already kind of looked like he was forcing the issue, throwing balls, trying to force him in the windows.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, if you would have calmed down, it could have been the world.
Right. I mean, four of his five interceptions that he threw in this game were in the first half alone. So it wasn't like he was chucking balls late and trying to come back or anything, and he threw bad passes. This started early in the game for him. Just kind of choked under the pressure and tried to force things to happen, which we hadn't seen. You know, he'd thrown one interception this entire season.
That, it was all, you know what I mean?
It really wasn't that like bad of a pass. It was
right into someone's hands. Yeah, right,
exactly. And in this game, I mean, it was bad pass after bad pass. I don't know where the accuracy went, because we talked about it. You know, if he gets some of these receivers to catch some of these drops that they had, he's over 80% completion on the year.
And that was the thing too. The drive they had in the first quarter, where it was like they were marching a little bit. He's halfway there at the halfway point,
right?
And he overthrows a wide open receiver. It was like that was the telling sign of what was to come.
Right.
Because it was like the definition of that second quarter.
Right. Exactly. And then beyond Talia, because it doesn't all fall on Talia's shoulder.
It really doesn't.
It was just a very undisciplined game by the entire team. Again, like I mentioned, 10 penalties in this game, continuing to shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, killing any potential drive opportunities that they had early in this game. One of the highest penalized teams in the Big Ten at this point. So this isn't, again, this wasn't an isolated incident to just this game.
Yeah, it wasn't just a mountain of a molehill of a game.
Yeah, this has been an ongoing thing with this team. They're playing undisciplined football. I'm surprised that we're sitting here talking about this team at 4-1, just because, again, usually a team that plays and makes these kind of mental mistakes don't do well when it comes to wins and losses.
They would have found an upset against Kent State.
Exactly. Secondary, this was another issue. Completely outplayed in this game. Beat many a times again in man coverage in this game. I will say, still had a good game in this game. He was probably the only one in the secondary for me that would get a positive grade.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything. Even talking like, you know, Nick Cross in this game, didn't really make any explosive plays, any big plays in this game. Just keep getting beat over the top in man coverage. Again, not looking back for the football.
Yeah. Yeah, that's clear as day. Right. Not looking back for the football. It literally is. Just having that awareness on the field can make a difference.
And this Iowa team that came in, they weren't a daunting offense. Like, they were a game managing.
That was the thing that had me buying in, as I'll admit, I'm a fair weather fan, and this kind of results are the reason why I've always been a fair weather fan. So going into the game, I was pumped.
Right.
And it was like anything I had seen positive in the other four games, it was completely out the window.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the Iowa offense comes into this game, it kind of ranked in the mid to lower half of the Big Ten statistically. Well, Petraeus had no problem shredding this defense.
And that was the thing, too. He wasn't like, it isn't like he's, okay, maybe they didn't have any running game whatsoever, but he's a great quarterback. He literally is like average,
right?
And then he looked like what Talia had been looking the first few weeks.
Exactly.
He was just sitting back there comfortable.
Boom. Right.
That too. Comfortable.
21 of 30, 259 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns in this game. That's a problem, you know, because the quarterbacks get a lot better in the Big Ten, and it starts this Saturday noon as we go into Columbus to take on.
That's the sad part about, and that was the thing I had thought about after the game the next day. It was like, the sad part is it doesn't get any easier.
Right. Right. We're going into Ohio State to take on the number seven team in the country.
If your next game was Rutgers, which, I mean, they've been looking better lately, but if it's, you know, if you had another one of those cupcake games or a team that you would expect to be more evenly matched, all right, well, that was a bad game. Clearly you're facing the number five team in the nation. Get some confidence and then play some more of these big dogs, but nope, you just got the big dogs coming.
Right. Well, Ohio State's one of those big dogs, sitting at 4-1 on the season right now. Early on in the year, their quarterback, freshman C.J. Stroud, I wasn't super impressed with. But again, he was a freshman, five-star recruit quarterback coming in. Need to get his feet wet. He's gotten better and better each week. Just absolutely destroyed Rutgers this past week, throwing for over 300 yards and five touchdowns. So this kid's figuring out. This is going to be a real, real daunting challenge for the Terps, one that I don't see the Terps winning. But here's the thing. There's a couple of things that I'm going to look for in this game. Do you play clean football? Can you play disciplined football?
You're going to have to. You can't have to.
I don't even care about the win or loss in this game, right?
Because my
big goal for this team has always just been get to a bowl. Getting to a bowl means two more wins. They've got four. They mean two more wins. They can find that outside of Ohio State in two more wins. My goal in this game is play disciplined. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Don't cause unnecessary, penalties.
Yeah.
And can Talia bounce back from adversity?
Can he bounce back from adversity without his biggest weapon?
Right.
That is the kicker. It's not just can he bounce back. It's can he back. If he had Demas, I would be saying, yeah, I think he's got a shot at being. Without Demas, can he truly bounce back? Can anybody else step up and fill the shoes of what Demas was doing?
Well, the thing that we talked about at ends going into this season was the Terps have a stacked wide receiver core. And yeah, it sucks to lose the best of the best in Dante Demas. It sucks for the kid, too. Not just selfishly as a fan. It sucks for the kid. This is a kid that was projected to be a second-round pick. Mel Kiper, prior to this game, had just put out his wide receiver rankings, and he was in the top 10
for his
wide receiver rankings coming into this year's draft.
That's second round.
Yeah, that's second-round pick, round. 100%. So, all the well wishes to Dante Demas, man. Hope for a speedy recovery and hope you bounce back from it. He was seen getting carried off the field on the cart saying, I'm coming back.
Not as much, buddy.
We'll see what he means by that. I damn sure didn't think he meant coming back that game. Does that mean he's coming back this year? Does that mean he's coming back for another year because of the COVID thing?
Ohio State. I don't know what your guys are talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. But this wide receiver core, it's deep, right? And there's a lot of guys that we haven't seen get a lot of play time. Can Jayshon Jones step up and be the playmaker that he once was his freshman year? He's going to get more run with the team. He's going to get more receptions. Can a vet like Brian Cobbs step up and be more productive? There's a lot of guys in this offense, and especially in this wide receiver core, that can make up the void.
And to Googs' point, John Googs in the chat says this is on national TV. This is a nationally televised game with Fox, right, at noon. This is a game that a lot of people are going to be watching, right, especially considering what they did against Ohio State previously,
right?
So there are a lot of chances for this team. I just don't know. I don't know that they can. If I'm being honest with you, I think this is a guarantee. I know that you said you kind of think this. It's guaranteed loss in my. I'm writing it down as a guaranteed loss.
Yeah, line in this game is 21, negative 21 to Ohio State. Ohio State's going to win this football game.
If you lost this by 21, I'd be surprised.
The only way Ohio State doesn't win this football game is if we play a perfect football game and Ohio State shoots themselves in the foot, right?
Yeah.
So that's, again, those are the silver linings. Can Talia bounce back? Can they play a clean football game? And what does this secondary look like against some of the best of the best wide receivers? You got Chris Olave. You got Garrett Wilson, two of the best wide receivers in the country in this game. It's going to be a real, real test for this secondary. So those are the three things that I'm going to be looking at in this game. Drew, Scott and I had already kind of said it. We don't think the Terps have it in them to win it. What do you see?
I guess I'll refer back to my Fairweather fans.
Give a shit.
No, I mean, I still want to see them do great. Like, it's the local team. It's still who I want to be there. I mean, it's a lot like, we'll flip the switch. It's kind of like with Ryan with Orioles.
Yeah.
You want them to do good. You want to be able to root for them and go to those games.
But you feel like you're reading the same book over and over again.
The same book over and over again.
Yeah.
So, once I saw the line was 21, I have no confidence whatsoever. And it'd be a different story where, like, if they lost to Iowa, but it was a 10-point loss, that showed some kind of, fight. You didn't show any fight whatsoever. You didn't show any fight back to the adversity. Like, if you show that adversity in the second quarter against Ohio State, it's over.
Right.
Because they're better than you athletically. Like, you thought you were better than Iowa athletically. Well, they're way better than you athletically.
Right.
So, the line being 21, I don't have high hopes.
Guys, it wasn't a great week, but we're still here. And the fact that you're here right now means that you're in the top 5% of Maryland fans, period. That number might be too high. Might be top 1%. So, you know, dust yourself off. Get comfortable on Saturday because it's not going to get a lot better. It might get a little better. But let's just keep in mind we're 4-1. Worst case scenario will be 4-2 going into some much more winnable games. Now, they're still Big Ten monsters, but it's not going to be top 10 rankings outside of Penn State. So let's keep it even keel. We're still looking at a bowl game. That was the goal the whole way through. We all changed our mind what the goal was after 4 wins. That's not on the team. So until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the show.